Cult of the Mask of Power? Hockey spiritual virility street fighter. Traditionalist archetypes Hollywood white man Stephen King. Archetype of Jewish mind pollution Jewtrek race wars. Episodes 1 and 2 predictive programming spirit spiritual virility esotericism. Disempowering and empowering what purports to be, or qualifies, esotericism today is the Semitic lunapathos of contemplative passivity on the one hand, combined on the other and paradoxically, with the active thonic tellurism of an emotional irrational nature embodied in Illuminist and Masonic orders. The former assumes the form of Christianity and other similar creeds, but all are blended by and large, and structured into an inner theatic degree system whereby the most corruptible and hypocritical members ascend up the ranks of evil, becoming ever more evil the higher up they go, and becoming more of a child of hell than their Jewish masters. The Jews control and manage the inner theatic system and bind egoism with demons subordinated to their will as part of the hive mind entity. They become bound up with the so many flies in the spider's web, flies who would be spiders, and yet who are nonetheless flies. This pseudo-gnosis is attributed to be gnosis itself, but is in reality a mere simulacrum fiction, and serves as a spider's web beguiling the self-seekers, and even some truth-seekers into its illusory gleaming strands. This gnosis is an alloy of Jewish syncretism, a thieving and perpetual borrowing formal Aryan pre-Christian civilizations which have been laid waste through Jewish infiltration and destruction. The pseudo-gnosis of these organizations, far from empowering, simply disempower through an erring conscious self, no longer a distinct self, but a merely controlled puppet and made in the system of the Zion Matrix, one wire puller at a certain level, being pulled from above by yet other wire pullers at higher levels. The gnosis is perhaps a conference of some degree of power upon the initiate, and yet these same are bound up with the cabal, and are in effect the property of the cabal as the individual member has subordinated their own will to the cabal, becoming its slave. Thus what is possessed by the individual soul is merely a transient set of powers on this from the cabal, are lost post-mortem. The slave mechanism works through a binding to the egregors of the Jewish black magic systems which are all oriented around these thought forms. Egg, Christ, Jesus, Komarev, Jehovah, etc. all are de facto Judaism for Gentiles, and all are mere traps offering at best transient benefits that have no correlation with anything tangible after this world and the individual's life therein. What is promised as immortality, what is conferred as the assimilation of one's soul in the hive mind of Jerry, to serve Jerry as energetic food, and the entities they work with in addition to the individuals serving as a vehicle on the earth plane of these entities in their quest for the vampirization of soul energy. Thus for esotericism in the modern world, a result of modernist syncretism of Aryan traditions blended together and distorted by Jerry as a psyop for their control of the earth. Such a gnosis is pseudo-gnosis as, being a distilled product of syncretism, cannot be anything but falsehood. What then is true wisdom or gnosis? The answer lies in Aryan tradition over the world, and in the remnants of ancient civilizations in the tangible form of bas-reliefs, hieroglyphics, texts and parchments, statuary and monuments, temples and sacred sites. Such is the key to wisdom, or rather Theduaway, not the church or its New Age variants. The key to the door must be forged in the furnace of the higher mind, freed of its Judeo-Christian fetters, and flung open to reveal the light of truth unto the earth, and banishing the darkness of Jewish illusion. The pseudo-gnosis of Jerry disempowers, theognosis of the Aryan empowers and truly liberates from the matrix. What then is true wisdom? In terms of recoverable and currently known wisdom, or are the signposts leading to wisdom, as wisdom can only be obtained by those capable of wisdom, by the wise potentially and actually, by the Aryan race exclusively, all else being mere blind men groping in the dark of their ignorant minds for light, and finding nothing but the dull glow of the false light in the form of night crawlers and other telluric creatures. The wisdom of the Aryan race derives from the gods, their creators and their Hyperborean origin, and indeed of the extraterrestrial origin. All wisdom on the earth properly so called is perceptible only in the remnants of the Aryan civilizations whose civilizations were destroyed through the destructive influence of Jerry. The Aryans themselves have that wisdom contained within them, and thus they must investigate the past, in order to understand themselves, and to recover the lost gnosis as archaeologists of knowledge. What currently exists in the way of Aryan gnosis is now a distortion of the original form. Tibetan Bonpo, Chinese Taoism, Vedism, perhaps a recoverable form of meagnosis from South America, the aerial Inderbock, the corrupted Gnosticism of the Near East, all now degraded and tainted by having been in the custody of the mongrel non-whites who live in the geographical locations which bear their name, perhaps even the Sufism or similar Near Eastern forms of Gnosis would have redeemable elements, the Egyptian, etc. All of these are sources of wisdom through mixed with Semitic elements, that have no place, and must be excised therefrom, in order to be practical and capable of being put into a form of action, to transmute the degraded consciousness of Aryan kind into that of God consciousness, a return to Hyperborea and the state of God mind, that is the sole possession of the Aryan race. Rekindling the divine spark that has grown dim in the Aryan requires this recovery of Gnosis and indeed its active practice. The writer can recommend only following with discernment in the footsteps of such as Julius Evola and René Guénon, and of Miguel Serrano as a direction to head in, and a means of the development of the higher self. The joy of Satan's practices and those of the Amonists are yet more practical, and are modernist attempts at reconstructing the tradition of Hyperborea, but are fallible, and possibly psyops themselves on the part of Jiri, who infiltrates everywhere, and distorts everything, subverting knowledge and wisdom and supplanting true Gnosis with the false syncretism, that is Jiri's method of subversion of the Aryan race, for to lack an understanding of truth is to precipitate one's destruction at the hands of his enemies, should they have the truth, and to use it against him. Spiritual virility is the transmutation of the personality into the immortal self, the diamond thunderbolt body, and is through the yoga of power, and the appropriate integration of all facets of his soul into a diamond hard structure, that can endure the transience of life in this world, and can enable his perpetuation over and against the current of the demiurge which will wash over the unenlightened, and sweep them away in its corrosive waters. Aryan Gnosis is the key to the kingdom of heaven. The golden gates are barred to all who follow the self-destructive path of transmitting their thought energy to the Jew as a Christian or mainstream religious slave, or of transmuting oneself into a child of hell in their Taylorism mysteries of deceit and falsehood. The truth lies with the Aryan. It is up to him to discover it. He holds the key which lies within him as the divine spark, to unlock the mysteries of the gods, and to become a god harmonizing with the true God, which is not the fictional construct of Jiri, recipe for global enslavement, but the sum total of being, the creator which created all life as its source. The death cult of Abrahamic religion is the curse the Jew has visited upon the earth, to bind the souls of their slaves to their master, the Dark Lord, in one ring, to rule them all. True life, eternal life, comes in the form of opposition to the death cult of Abraham, exposing its falsehood and adhering to a life of true spiritual virility. Yoga, meditation, bodily and mental purity, living a life in accordance with nature and God, and condemning the life of a pacifistic hardened reality-denying escapist such as the Judeo-Christian. The Judeo-Christian is a zombie living life against life, a captive soul of Jiri and their dark masters, incapable of transcending their state of slavery, and doomed to have their souls vampirized post-mortem as they have failed in the cultivation of their soul, and have bound themselves to the egregors of Jiri. Christ, Rev. Jehovah, et al. The divide between those who are the slavish sheep of the Jew world order, and those able to ascend the mountain of Olympus, and to ascend beyond the matrix prison of material slavery, not as a cowardly escapism, but as an ability to be in the world, yet not of the world, an Aryan warrior as well as an Aryan Virya. Let truth and justice be your standard in the combat against the demiurge and Jehovah and his minions, the Jews, and attain victory even through death, as there is no death for the Aryan Godman, only for the Wiggers and race raiders who have bound themselves to foreign thought forms and gods. Asceticism, fatalism, or detachment. The conventional notion of asceticism is that of a monk or a fakir half-starved and flagellating themselves with a birch rod, subsisting on nuts and berries, or locusts and honey, and living simply to die, or to await a heaven world hereafter, being in the world, yet not of the world. However, this being in the world is simultaneously an on-being, as such a being is living life against life, not in a spiritual sense, but in an antagonistic sense, against what is referred to as worldliness, or all action of a vital nature. Such an asceticism may have some virtue in the spiritual development of the true self, the higher self, but it is at the same time a very poor substitute for the active spiritual virility of the Aryan hero. The historical asceticism of this kind was that of a crystallization or ossification of one's latent potentialities, to be through the rejection of their appropriate cultivation through the appropriate spiritual practices. To reject spiritual development through a life of neurotic inhibition is a recipe for self-destruction, as the soul atrophies through failure of its cultivation, and this is the inevitable result of allowing oneself to weaken in his activity, in the essence of his soul, which atrophies in the midst of the play of forces which impinge upon it at all times and places. Strengthening the soul and detaching it from the material plane, from the corrosive waters through such negative practices, has value only to the extent that it assists at times in overcoming the demiurge's influence, but does not positively cultivate the occult anatomy, and creates through that means a fully integrated soul, and thus fails at attaining the immortalization of the soul. Christian Abrahamic and Hindu ascetic Zamgas aims at overcoming worldliness, and in most cases, does violence to the potentially integrated man through the infliction of weakening processes that simply diminish the life force, egg, malnutrition, atrophy of the body and soul, the administration of violence thereto, which does not conduce to overall strength, but simply makes one weaker over time. The true path of spiritual virility is the left-hand path, the Vama Marga, ascending the mountain top. Through struggle, and through this process strengthening oneself against the forces of chaos, gods, foreign and authentic, just who is, are the Aryan goddess. The tangled web woven over the millennia by Jury has led the white race to become confused, used and abused, as Matt Hale said, by the Jewish interloper who has scrambled their brains with his psychosurgery black magic. The god and all gods of Yore are covered in the dust of the past, and concealed under layers of earth by the Jews who sought to destroy the historical blood memory of the white race, and to substitute it with a memory of their own invention, their alleged absolute deity who goes by the name Jehovah of. Such is the claim propounded by the so-called neo-pagans and other racialists who, understanding the racial message transmitted into their consciousness by the blood memory, recognize that the current forms of organized religion, foremost amongst which being Judeo-Christianity, are largely an invention of Jury and serviceable for their plans of global dominion and the extermination of the white race. Should the white race have a compass that would direct them towards the truth, they would be able to recognize that Jury is the problem, and that they are dupes of Judah hooked into mind-controlled falsehood that leads them away from the light and an understanding of what to do and how once the truth is known. Thus we, the white race, have a dilemma on our hands which requires a solution and necessitates a thorough investigation into truth. Thus one must consult all available sources, especially those which have been buried in the labyrinthine libraries and catacombs, and must discover the truth of his past and present. Indeed, truth itself, which admits of no temporality or contingency, or it is eternal. Examining sources, especially which are most rare and difficult to obtain, and most concealed and obscured by the hidden hand of the cabal. Thus and only thus can one come to an understanding of truth, and thus necessarily under the auspices of higher intuition and reason, through living a pure life according to the divine will, and thereby being granted access to the divine mind. One's own purity of body, mind and soul are the key to the kingdom of heaven, to be as God, being one of the descendants of God, one of the children of light, human, man of spirit transmitted through blood, purity and race. Thus the road to attain truth is presented, but the journey is the difficult undertaking. The tangled skein of Jewish mendacity is a Gordian knot not readily disentangled, and thus one must begin at the beginning, which has no origin point save oneself, a given being of limited and fallible understanding at a given point of time, space in this material dimension, and one must thus work one's way back to God, to the heavenly realm from whence he come. The writer can thus only lend insight from his finite and fallible positions. Indeed, he can lend insight only, not his own finite and fallible mind, which is a fractal of the divine mind, the microcosm of the macrocosm. The history of the world, of the cycles of time, has wound the writer up in incarnation at this given point in time-space, here and now, and can only divulge what little his understanding has to offer. We, the white race, now live in a Judeo-Christian communist world under the despotism of Judeo-Masonry, the cabal of evil, which itself is subordinate to the entities which have been called in terms of scriptures demons or satanic, malevolent entities who vampirize the energy of their slaves and seek to trap them in lower density on this the material plane, creating through their agents in the cabal, through their thieves' pact, conditions which lead to the creation of pain and suffering, which enables them to feed off the released energy and blood of the enslaved, used, confused, and abused population. They are thus enslaved, and exist shackled to the wheel of the matrix system that the Jews and then on Jewish puppets have engineered as a system of slavery and vampirization of the life force of their slaves. the lower density states of being, a vibrational frequency these entities and their earthly emissaries seek to develop and perpetuate are the matrix beyond which those trapped there must ascend, not in the cowardly way of a flight from reality, but in the sense of remaining in the world and giving combat to the enemy, minimizing the effect upon his person, and yet living with God, the heavenly dimension which exceeds the matrix in their frequency, and which elevate him above the fray of the sensory world of matricized illusion, the realm of Satan which attempts to drag all into lower density, and enslave them, and absorb their souls. Thus with the image of ontological reality, of reality as it exists in the material planes, we can understand that the God of the white race is he who can be reached by them as they exist with him. Thus they are able to transcend the material plane as they are not from this world, nor are they confined here, but exits on a higher plane of being inaccessible to the savage beastmen, the Jewish demons and the traitorous possessed roboticized white ratters who become subject to the spell of Jewish black magic and come under the influence of the astral parasites who vampirize their life force and who become their master tied into the hive mind of these entities which, being against God or the sum total of being, may properly be spoken of as the satanic hive mind to which their individual consciousness is bound, and which leads over intensity and time to the erosion of their individual self and absorption into the oversoul that has been crafted by Jury. The use of the so-called belief of Christians, which was the creation of the Catholic Church under the Jewish Emperor of the Roman Empire Constantine as a means of binding via black magic the minds of the Judeo-Christian to the thought forms of Jury, assist in tying them into the hive mind through the consciousness, being hooked as a worm on the hook of the fishes of man. The Jews who use their emotive psycho-influence of black magic deceit to create this fusion between the individual consciousness and their hive mind entity, which attaches the individual to the oversoul as a fruit on the poison tree whose flesh they absorb along with their astral parasite masters. The talk of Jesus and Jehovah and of is all a usage of black magic mind control to manipulate the consciousness of the white race, to subordinate itself with passivity to the Jews and their influence. Judeo-Christianity and indeed all other forms of mainstream religion bind the consciousness of the individual to the hive mind and lead to a life of passive inertia and slavery before the One, rather than dwelling with the One in an active way, empowering oneself and enabling one's own immortalization. They lead to the gradual erosion of the soul and extinction of the self, being ultimately absorbed into the One. The fear porn and indeed psycho-spiritual terrorism of Jury has imposed itself upon the mind of the white population, has kept it enslaved for the entirety of its history. These Jewish-created entities are in no way authentically Aryan, and are merely hooks which catch upon one's soul and reel him into the satanic hive mind to be further used, confused, and abused by the Jewish demon, beastmen and race traitor whites. Knowing that this is the reality of spirituality, that what are portrayed and represented as God and demons from the perspective of Jury, it begs the question of what or who are the God or gods of the white race, children of light, human. The answer is they themselves are gods who were created by the Ryan white gods who descended from the heavens and came onto this planet and created them by genetic engineering. All myths of the white race globally speak of such occurrences, of Imana, of flying craft, of Quetzalcoatl who came onto the earth and gave civilization to all. There are, granted, many different forms of spirit and beings who dwell in other dimensions, some benevolent and others malevolent, but they nonetheless undoubtedly exist as the sum total of history proves. The Jews have, in their biblical distortions, scribed many fallacies portraying the gods of the white race as demons and the tribes of whites as devils, or pagan and evil, and described them as being killed and genocided by their tribal deity. In reality, an invented thought form that serves the purpose of binding souls to itself through hypnotic and black magic influence. The invention of Jury of an external savior figure was undergone to have others, the whites they seek to target, become pacifistic cowards and weaklings incapable of any form of action which is not issued as a command by the Jewish master as a fatwa to kill and destroy the race. Personal responsibility is abolished through their salvationist inevitabilism, which claims that the Armageddon, end times, is inevitable, and this must be submitted to via praising and worshipping in passive prayer this Jewish invented thought form, thereby transferring thought energy to the Jews and weakening one's soul, which strengthens the bonds of the satanic hive mind, and which closed around oneself and further erode his soul. The function of mainstream religion is to render the masses unintelligent slaves who exist only to worship and bow before me, and to absolve themselves of any personal responsibility for their own actions. The old gods have been buried in the rubble of ruined civilizations which have their downfall through inner corruption and decadence largely through the accommodation of Jiri into the population who was the introducer of the vile poison in the first place. The old gods and God in his true form as Allfather call the white race to give battle against the evil tide of the demiurge and Jiri who are his minions, and slaves of the dark forces. Vampiric entities who wish to transform the earth into a soul farm, that they can use as a machine, to harvest the souls of its inhabitants. The salvation of the white race derives from a reactivation of the blood memory, of archetypes and an exposure of the false gods of Jewish contrivance which have manifested themselves in the form of mainstream organized religion. The truth alone will not set you free. This is yet another fallacy deriving from Jewish contrived organized religion. Acting on the truth, while living in the truth, is the only condition of freedom, and no truth will be discovered in the scribings of pharisaical distorters and imitators of the truth. Only through the blood memory of the Aryan can truth be known, as it is only he who lives in the truth, even in spite of the confusion of his mind by the Jewish parasite distorters and their fabricated vain philosophy. The old god and gods are the way forwards for Aryan victory. The will, the basis of spiritual virility, is the cultivation of the will, its direction towards an objective for the realization of the objective or other conception. Spirituality, if it should have any potency at all, that is to say, if it should be spiritual life, rather than spiritual death, must entail willpower. Its development and employment are so one-pointed concentration of energy, of the conscious mind, an eye for laser of the mind, penetrating an object and the veils of Ma'u which see beyond it to its inner core. Willpower is the projection of the vision of the mind towards an external object, mobilizing the corporeal form as a vehicle of its expression. The solar Uranian spirituality of the Aryan race is a spirituality which orients itself around this one-pointed concentration of energy radiating forth from the center of the mind spirit. This contrasts as a completely oppositional form from that of the so-called Asiatic Near Eastern Mediterranean stock who, presumably by virtue of their hybridity, their neonatal blood, and whatever entities have become bound to them by virtue of this fact, by virtue of their inner chaos. This inner doing manifests itself outwardly in behavioral chaos, and, codified in magical forms, it comprises the lunar feminine spirituality of that hybrid stock which has largely become synonymous with spirituality today, be it in the forms of Abrahamic religion, or esoterically in that of Illuminism and its countless variants. All subordinate themselves to a mother goddess figure, and are based upon one's relationship to this grand pewter cosmic mother figure. All rites and practices orient around a female dominant modality of consciousness and behavior, one that descends into a chaotic madness of irrational frenzy and impassioned ecstasis. The inevitable trajectory of this modality of spirituality is an immersion in the corrosive waters, a submergence and drowning of the will in the river of samsara, becoming overcome by its tempestuous nature, made tempestuous by the entities who are habitually invoked in those vile rites. The lower energy centers are always engaged in the lunar feminine practices, and, rather than working up the energies via control of the lower centers in Kabbalistic path workings, they are instead pulled down into the lower states of being, and this leads to a gradual extinction of their soul through entity attachment. Thus the lunar feminine chthonic spiritual leads to a negation and disintegration of the soul, with the self becoming decented, and this through not only a lack of willpower, something characteristically absent in the Semitic type, who is a slave to his passions at the best of times, but through the development beyond and balanced state of the lower centers of the energy body, and most significantly and decisively the attachment of the vampiric entities who then take control of one's will over time, overpowering the individual and consuming him. This vampirism extends itself to those who are not willing to participate in the activity, those who became sacrifices for these entities. The solar Uranian spirituality properly so called, that of the Aryan, of the white race, is that whose basis is always the will, and its control as means of amplifying and empowering the consciousness. It focuses energy in the heart chakras or energy centers of the soul, and works towards the amplification of the soul through challenges against opposition, not through the vile promiscuity with each and all an orgistic rites of salacious lust, but through as a mountain climber subjecting the self to threatening external challenges as means of increasing power as a reaction to those challenges and developing the higher true self through attachment to the higher principles being the entities which are of a benevolent nature and which serve as guides and work with one in their self-development, not forces alone as construed in scientific terms, but entities that had gone by other names throughout the history of the Aryan race in its quest for glory and power and creative action over the earth. The soul as spirituality entails the concentration of the sun of mind on the entirety of its conception of an external object and the transmission of its rays in the most concentrated form of power suitable for its object. The intentionality of the will is the principal element of solar spirituality, with an emphasis on overcoming of the phenomenal self, the simulacrum of the true self which is immersed in the corrosive waters, and an attempt to, by attaching the consciousness to its higher principles, transcend the welter of transient phenomena. Like the sun, it is constancy, it is radiance, it is a dwelling at the peak of the firmament in the heavens, in the real of eternal forms, the heaven above. The theistic conception of acting without acting, the Buddhistic conception of non-attachment detachment, and the Zen conception of Satori, though apparently oriental in the racial Asiatic sense, were all derivative of the primordial Aryan stock which constituted the formative elements of those regions of the earth, and gave rise to such things as the Tao Te Ching, the hexagrams and the Vedas and Bhagavad Gita. Hence the Se conceptions, though apparently lunar, and derived from an Asiatic Mongol stock are in actuality merely the inheritance of the latter who were their custodians, and who distorted them to a degree, introducing the chthonic elements of their bio-spiritual kind, and dragging the sun of mind from its height to its warlike position in its current form. Nonetheless, these conceptions are still redeemable and susceptible of integration into the practices called solar-uranic thought. The tradition is difficult to understand now that it has largely been distorted, and nearly beyond recognition it is still a presence in those remnants that linger within the current Abrahamic tradition of Semitic hybridity and lunifeminine pathos, and in the alchemical Hermetic tradition is amplified in Giulio Savola's works The Mystery of the Grail and the Hermetic Tradition. The task ahead for those who wish to assist in the redemption of the Aryan solar Uranian conception is to investigate the mythos of the Aryan as they exist in the currently available texts, and apparent myths and folk tales, and to discern similarities of metaphysical principles and archetypes, and to extract a unified tradition adjusted for an independence of historical contingencies. At present one must employ his suprarational intuition to sift the wheat from the chaff, and to conclude which of the currently available practice is inherent in all distorted forms of the Aryan tradition, everything from Nordic neopaganism, New Age variants, the traditionalists, synthesizing together all elements which resonate with the Nordico-Germanic racial soul and living according to one's proper nature, attuning oneself to deity, and to the gods of one's ancestors. Spiritual virility is the application of willpower for the realization of the conception, and that form which is the only true form of spirituality is that which is authentically Aryan, and can only be known by, and through the consciousness of the Aryan. Only those with the spirit can understand God, and indeed can be said to be gods, beings of a superlative nature who dwell in heaven above the material plane of transience. The divine spark is the sole property of the Aryan race, and is the eternal light of the sun of mind, that cast its refulgent glow over the earth, banishing the darkness and illumining the world. It is the training of the will which makes the heaven world a possibility, and the will's employment, its direction, a reality. Art is the aesthetic concretization of the racial soul in a particular formation, a sensory form of creation, that is the manifestation of this racial soul through the mediation of the individual person who is a member of his race, the particularization of the universal in aesthetics. Art can both ennoble and debase, and the person who is its creator determines the form of the creation as the outer is the manifestation of the inner. An evil mind begetting evil art and a noble mind, noble art. Under the aegis of a healthy racial soul, which necessarily means a racially homogeneous society uncontaminated with the presence of diverse types who creates a evoke chaoses which could only manifest itself outwardly in the form of modern art, i.e., the aesthetic fecal matter of a chaotic racial soul, one which has become polluted with the excretion of foreign influence. The influence of Christianity via the Jewish intruders into ancient Rome was one of the major contaminants of the racial soul of whites. And yet nonetheless the Aryan consciousness manifested itself from under the dross of excreta that was heaped upon it. the nobility of the Aryan soul shone forth through the darkness of the Dark Ages, and revealed itself even in spite of the Semitic tissue which had mummified it, causing it to lie dormant from millennia. The art of the Aryan is that which is pure and beautiful, that which is well defined and formed according to an orderly model that reflects the divine will. It is linear without being formalistic and lifeless. It is vital without being animalistic. The latter properties define modern art, which is the artwork of Jerry, of the Lunifemin inch on a chirational modality of consciousness which crystallizes in the form of excreta, the music of John Cage, of Brahms, of Stravinsky, and in more postmodernist forms such as the Beatniks and Neil Diamond, Elvis Presley, jazz, rap, rock, and every other form of schlock, all of Jewish origin and Jewish invention, the mediation of chaos through the physical vehicle of Jerry, the plastic art of Ophidius, of an Arnobrika compared to the Borges, and other more degenerate forms of art provide yet another example of the superlative nature of Aryan and Mediterranean architecture, and well underscores the contrast, and through the architectural designs of Jerry, are a plagiaristic distortion of Aryan design. The buildings Jerry designed are an obscenity in relation to the cosmic order, as they are based upon a violation of cosmic order, typically of a square and Borges form with a utilitarian and fortress-like quality to them. Pictorial art forms, the most ancient wall paintings of Egypt in their origin to those of the Third Reich, contrasted with the crude Etruscan wall paintings to the works of George Grosz and the smear and paint by numbers artists, further illustrate the contrast between Aryan art and Jewish and Artkunst. The extrapolation of the universal is through the particular person, member of the race. Accordingly, as above outlined, there is it which is a spiritually degenerative influence on the racial soul and its individual members, and there is it which is a spiritually generative influence, one bringing low the consciousness and defiling it, the other elevates. That form of art, be it visual, tactile, auditory or multisensory, which is Aryan, is that which accords with cosmic law and its manifestation in the differentiated order of the universe, and this elevates and ennobles, bringing the consciousness of the viewer into a state of greater resonance with the divine will. The converse, that of subjection of one's mind to the art of the Jews and savages, creates a deviation from the divine will, and leads the experiencer away from God and towards destruction, the fragmentation of his soul. This is the purpose of art in the Jewish genocide campaign against the white race destruction. To react against this, and to ensure the survival of the white race, the art of cosmic order, the extension and crystallization of the divine will through the consciousness of the Aryan, is needed, and the proper form of the artwork is that which is the imitation of the truth, not as a forgery and plagiarist, but as a copy of the divine will in the creation, and of all of those forms which are part thereof. Art should not only be a reflexive imitation and representation of the creation in its pure form, however, but should be a creation of its own right, one which conditions the experiencer through the sense to develop themselves and strengthen themselves for the combat to come. Thus the art of the present age must be as engines of war which condition the racial soul and its members to prepare for the battle to come. The martial music of the Third Reich and fascists, and even the music of harpsichord with its ordered structure, the visual art of heroism in painting, video and photograph, the design of one's implements and equipment, all must have a martial quality and work towards the victory over the enemy. The art which conduces to spiritual virility, to a shifting of the consciousness of the experiencer, to become who he is that which activates the blood memory, and binds him tighter to the racial soul, rekindling the memory of ancestry and enabling him to more effectively represent the tradition of his forebears in thought, word and deed. In terms of music, it is that which utilizes traditional instruments which are sufficiently refined in their tonal complexity to elevate the consciousness, just as the more primitive and simplistic instruments also may activate the state of consciousness, such as the difference and yet similarity between the music of Wagner and the ring of the Nibelungen, and the drums of the Third Reich, all having structured and ordered cadence and yet, however, fallen from tradition and bound to modernism. As in the case of Wagner's Romanticism, they nevertheless contain the forest murmurs of the gods and announce the triumph of the will. Music which ennobles and enables transcendence beyond the world of chaotic forms that exist at this time in the bottom of the Kali Yuga. In terms of pictorial art, it is not the conventional high art of the 18th and 19th century Romanticism that evokes the racial soul and the warrior spirit, so much as it is the pop cultural art of the low fantasy novels that activates the warrior spirit, beckoning one to three, just as it is of the history of all pictorial art of the Aryan ancient, medieval, modern, and postmodern, that activates the will and encourages the marginal spirits. The plastic medium of statue in the form of the wall-like figures of Bricker infinitely surpassed the decrepit figures of Rodin, a typical French modernist whose works bespeak the sickly organism of racial soul in its declining phase, contrary to the Teutonic drive of Bricker. Suits of armor are greater works offered than the delicate lace of 17th-century French courtesans, and serve the purpose of white survival, the latter leading by the path of temptation into the abyss. The Gothic cathedrals, with a redeeming Aryan element of a pathetic flight from reality, spiritual syphilis called Christianity, and their spires signal the transcendent character of the Hyperborean God-man. However, they in no way superseded the buildings of Rome at its height in grandeur, and the concretization of cosmic order and stone. The early pyramids of Egypt and those globally serve as testaments to the glory of the Hyperborean, and his heavenly architecture of imminent transcendence. Not only were these buildings aesthetically ennobling, but they were functional, built for the purpose of enabling actual transcendence and communication with the gods. The godlike nature of the Aryan is codified in his artistic self-expression, which, should it be an authentic expression of his inner being, is authentically Aryan and always of a transcendent nature, directing itself in tone, in image, in stone, on whatever medium, towards the gods, and against the enemies of the gods, the dark forces of the earth, who could never attain anything but degenerate forms of art, mere artifice and imitation of the truth in the sense of a discordant distortion of cosmic order, the divine will. Should the art of the Aryan continue to shine forth, it must be through combat, and through combat alone. The artwork of the future must be the artwork of tradition, both functional as a weapon of war, and a shield against the dark forces and their encroaching influence. Now and into the future, as into the past, the sword and shield, the armor and citadels of the Aryan, must be fashioned in the image of the divine will, and must be employed by the gods of the earth, the Aryan race, for Aryan victory over the darkness. Metaphysics of War. Julius Evola's work, The Metaphysics of War, provides an example of spiritual virility as it has been embodied in the traditions of world history. Those traditions, though corrupted and distorted over time, nonetheless entail elements of the Hyperborean gnosis that was the property of the descendants of the gods, those who have themselves fallen from grace and become the white race today, having been interbred at various times and places with the mongrel beastmen. Nonetheless, in certain regions, the traditions of the Hyperborean have survived throughout the migrations of their kind throughout the world. The metaphysics of war prescribe an active involvement in combat as means of experiencing, and indeed creating, an immanent transcendence, a transcendence of the lower states of consciousness by the higher self. This is achieved through posing a challenge of potential fragmentation to the self via external influences, which necessitates the development and employment of the will as means of overcoming the pull of the lower forces, as represented in an image in the pull of Jormungand, and against Thor in Ragnarok. The battle wages around one, and yet he transcends the opponent's assault, but in the most active sense, in a state of fully conscious presence necessitating an active engagement in the fray, and a heightened alertness as means of engaging in the fight, navigating the environment and reacting in a controlled manner to the stimuli, to the assault of others against oneself. Nonetheless, he, the combatant, is not necessarily affected, and those unaffected can prove most their ability to transcend the momentary stimuli, the distractions which impinge upon them, and which affect lesser men who are attached to the lower principles of consciousness, identifying themselves with their body, and are thus able to transcend pain as they are not pulled down into this state of identity with the body. The falsehood of pacifism also enters in here, and disqualifies the participant as possessed of that quality of spiritual virility. Dash's cowardly escapism and refusal to engage in combat is a signifier of weakness, of attachment to matter, and the phenomenal world, and thus an incapacity to fight, or opposite enemy other, especially if it is his lower self. The conventional false association between passive contemplation or devotion to the One is a testament to a lack of spiritual power, a testament to a weak constitution, and typically it is those of a weak constitution who gravitate towards this pseudo-spiritual state of being, which is authentically spiritual only for themselves, namely the path of weakness, a characteristically Christian behavior and one which simply reciprocates the cycle of abuse of the sickness unto death of a Christianity or a Buddhism, etc. of a weakness is virtue's use as spirituality leading ultimately to the extinction of one's soul through a failure to challenge and strengthen it in the fires of battle, not only against oneself, but for one's own kind, his race and nation, and against that which threatens its continuance. Spiritual virility is forged in the cold fire of detachment, and hardened as steel to be employed against one's enemies. Masculinism vs. Bitterkuck and Macho. The archetype of masculinity is presented today as the macho figure, the alpha male in the simian sense of the most aggressive, domineering and animalistic in character and behavior, the chest-beating white knight who serves the role of a defender of females and other so-called victims, those who are not heterosexual, white and male. This figure is a serviceable tool of the Jews in their destruction of the white race as it enables Jews to conscript the white man to fight against his own race, against the so-called racists, or within the kosher context of the left-right spectrum of the egalitarian matrix. Right-wing Christian conservatives versus left-wing liberals. This figure of the alpha dog, alpha sheepdog, is projected into the collective consciousness as the hero figure who is considered a socially acceptable figure that the broad masses can have regard for, at least up to the present time, when now even these figs of cut conservative limp dicks are put in the crosshairs now that the Jew has no longer so much use for them given the numbers of non-whites and the disempowerment of the white man that has gone on and culminated in his lack of value for their system according to the Jews' reckoning save as an expendable tool to hurl against the jihadists, libtards, and racists. This figure was considered heroic and serves as the last vestige of socially acceptable white masculinity, the remaining small island upon which the white man must be quarantined and assigned the mission of genociding his own race, of cutting his own throat as a noble gesture of sacrifice. This is the only permitted heroism of the white man the Jew allows, which heroism is a suicidal venture that serves to establish the diabolical Jew in absolute power, and to continue to create total chaos over the earth according to his biological imperative, and according to the impulsion of the entities which drive him forward in his rapacity. This behavior of the cuckold, of the macho man white knight who blindly attacks his own race, and who derives social capital through the commission of racial suicide, is that of a pathetic anti-hero, and can hardly qualify as a path of masculinity in both the spiritual and worldly sense of the word. Someone governed by irrational passion and unable to shed light in the darkness of his matrix prison but simply beguiled by the illusions of the black magicians of the cabal, leaps into action without thought and attacks the straw man of the racist, liberal, jihadist, etc. whatever popular target is established by the Jews in their crosshairs. The Jews understand how to exploit the desire of the masses to be popular, and play upon the popular crowd marketing to the individual in the appropriate way, the females through appealing to their vanity, to their lustful nature, their maternal instincts, their desire for prison-like comfort and safety, and to the males their desire to protect, defend, dominate and appear more powerful and strong in the eyes of the popular crowd. Thus here the Jews have provided a steam valve for the white man with their kosher conservative Wittig Knight anti-heroism, which enables them to save face amongst the popular crowd, and to accrue social capital through fighting the good fight good, according to Chandel values, the values of the Untermenschen, and their spokesman the Jews. Another steam valve the Jews have constructed to release justified pent-up white anger and aggression over all of the chaos they the Jews themselves have orchestrated is that of the libertarian. This figure is he whose entire mantra could be summed up in the phrase, "He who dies with the most toys wins." The entire motivation of the libertarian is to get, just like the Jew, to accumulate for themselves as much filthy lucre as possible, and to live to dominate the competition. Their worldview purports to be manly and masculine but is in reality merely a worldview of idiotic animality, a bestial behavior, a violent assault against the other, a psychopathic disregard for otherness. At least it may be said that, unlike the white knight, they don't have a pathological desire to appear publicly to assist the other. Thus they have at least a somewhat healthy mind, at least in terms of not hypocritically or actually falling into the mold of the white knight pathological altruist. However, this figure, the libertarian, also falls short of the standard of masculinity as he cannot play his proper role of a protector and defender of his own race, and instead callously disregards the fate of his own kind, and casts them into the flames, or into the gutter blinded by self-serving greed. Thus his Gosha form of masculinity is not masculinity itself, but a simulacrum of masculinity, a mere appearance behind which the reality is concealed. Both are at most a materialistic orientation and focused solely on materialistic purposes, within the purely human realm, and thus fall short of the standard of what might be called a true masculine, i.e., that which is of a spiritual kind, of a nature transcendent of the spatio-temporal conditions of the world. True masculinity will be defined here not, as in the case of the white knight, as an irrational emotional assault against that which is powerful and strong, that which is Aryan, that which is masculine in the true sense, nor as the selfish psychopath pursuing his liberium arbitrium, but rather as a being who can transcend his limited lower ego and live in the truth, in the higher self without effect, detached from the emotional chaos of the world and yet, not as the cowardly escapist, the dreamer or mystic, an escapism from the world, but rather a living in the world, while not being of the world, an immanent transcendence. The true masculinity entails a deliberate testing of oneself in the midst of the world of becoming, of combat and struggle, and is through placing oneself in the midst of things subjecting oneself to challenges which necessitate a reaction against those challenges which empowers the soul, and which strengthens it, enabling it to perpetuate itself amidst the chaos and strife of this world, and to perform the proper role of man within the context of this world, that of a creator first and foremost, and of a sustainer and builder of civilization and all of its entailments. Civilization stands and falls with the white man in his proper capacity as a man of race, the vehicle of the blood memory and bearer of the true light of the divine spark, not the white knight cuck who but raises his race in service to Hiju, and the latter's multicultist society, allowing himself not to be ridden like a mule, as in the case of the latter. Neither will he, the man of race, the true man, allow himself to be shunted to the side as a mere tax-paying self-indulgent who cares for nothing or anything but himself, and who fails as a man as no man is an island entire unto himself, but must, in order to qualify as a man, play a role in protecting and defending his own kind. That he fails todo-so suggests he has a defective mind, and this applies equally to the white knight, both of whom are not only cowards who can't fight against the popular crowd, but who can only fight for the popular crowd, if at all, and thus serving the Jew they go the way of all flesh, bringing greater chaos into the world, serving evil, and blinding themselves to their own evil, while representing themselves as good-good according to Chandler morality, not that of the Aryan. Beta-cuck absence of masculinity is the intention of Jura for the white race, an intentional project to strip away the masculine virtues from a society, so that it can be supplanted with one of their own making, masculinity representing the greatest threat as it is that which constitutes the protection and defense against forces from without, outside of a nation, that seek to enter in to destabilize it. Masculinity in its proper and true form is the greatest opponent of Jury, and thus is placed into their crosshairs as the main enemy needing to be done away with. However, given the relative lack of power, the Jews can't target the masculinist opposition directly and so work through proxies, while simultaneously pretending to be on the side of those they wish to destroy, and simultaneously on the side of those they conscript to destroy their main target. One of the principal techniques of their sabotage of the other, that the Jew undergoes, is to attempt to erode the masculine opposition gradually, and over time, and is through all manner of insidious techniques such as the introduction of effeminizing ideologies, and correlative lifestyle practices and various forms of drugs and alcohol as means of weakening the mind, body and soul of the male demographic. The resultant product of this erosion procedure, erosion of masculinity, is the beta cuck, the kosher conservative cuck, he who purports to be manly, and to protect and defend society is now transitioning to the beta-cuck role, serving the Jewish multicultural matrix prison society and as a kingle of its opponents. Thus, though not a completely effeminized figure, the conservative who sells his soul to the Jew and turns against his own race is merely transitioning to the status of a totally effeminized cuck. Nonetheless, he plays the role of a beta-cuck, a second fiddle to the Jew, and to the Jew's non-white slaves. This figure is in a way more pathetic one, though more redeemable than the flaming fag leftist gender bender race mixer, but nonetheless is still transitioning in the direction towards an even more pathetic status. This figure fails to play his proper role as a protector and defender of his own race, and fails, perhaps more importantly, to transcend the chaos of the world, and to give combat against the proper enemy. Perhaps this is because he does not know who the real enemy is, or perhaps he is simply too cowardly too far gone to be able to redeem himself from his fallen state. Regardless, the remains a bitter cuck and continues to go the way of all flesh, through failed opportunities to oppose the enemy. Whether it be ignorance, or lack of courage, it is a transition unto death with the downgoing of the current of the demiurge. Only those who have sufficient fortitude, sufficient remnants of masculine virtues to oppose the genocide of their own race. Those who can't acknowledge the genocide agenda are cucks of the lowliest and weakest stamp, and those who can't acknowledge it can't oppose it. The evidence is more than clear at this time, and necessitates action in defense of one's own. Failure to act is effeminate when one knows what must be done and has the means to do it, the very definition of incontinence according to Aristotle. In his Unsophistical Refutations he says, when a man has a goal and the means to it, straightway he acts. Failure to act is incontinent, cowardice, impotence of action, and failed masculinity. Those who fail to act are effeminate beta cucks deserving of castration, though for physical kind, as they have already allowed themselves to be castrated spiritually.